cheek. I fell asleep the moment she was gone. The next day I felt crappy. It was like having the flu or just getting over it. I was running a fever and my face was lightly flushed. When I got up, I vomited in the bathroom. This gathered me no sympathy. Recruits live pretty close to one another aboard ship. They towels snapped my ass as I bent over the commode. "What'd you do, man? Steal a bottle from Graves' office?" "Something like that," I said. They laughed and left me alone. I crawled to my feet and Carlos came to my rescue, sort of. "Nothing to see here, folks," Carlos said, waving the others away. "I know a few of you have had a beer or two in the past. Give the man some air."
"Thanks, man," I said.
"Come on, get your butt off the can," he muttered harshly into my ear. "We have to get our story straight." His shadow left me, and I was able to get to my feet again a minute or so later. I showered and felt better. I tried very hard to avoid thinking about why I was feeling low. I didn't like to believe I'd been reconstructed with spoiled meat. I told myself it was nothing more than a hangover. I was alive and getting better, and that was the only thing that mattered. When I made it out to roll call, I was the last man to find a spot. They called my name twice before I answered. Neither Veteran Harris or Adjunct Leeson said anything to me. After breakfast, which didn't go well for me, they trotted us out to the field. I was already sweating. I was relieved when Harris pulled me out of the line. Looking at him was hard to do. I was glaring and sick. I couldn't help but think of myself pulling the trigger and killing him again. I think he knew it, but it didn't seem to bother him much.
"McGill, Graves wants to see you upstairs."
I glanced up toward the observation tower. In the center of the exercise area was a tower with tinted bulletproof glass. I turned and began trotting toward it.
"And McGill," he shouted after me, "try to keep your head on straight. This could be big."
I had no idea what he was talking about, but I was certain he didn't want to turn his back to me while I was on the training field today. It was one thing to kill a man during training, but to tell a man he was being executed without trial, judge, or jury, and pulling the trigger with glee on your face, to me that crossed the line. I might be alive now, but I'd experienced what I thought was my final, one and only permanent death. That hadn't been fun. That soulless, hopeless moment alone, to know the lights are going out for the very last time. Chapter 17. I shuddered and found myself at the base of the observation tower. I opened it and discovered a spiraling staircase inside. I was huffing by the time I reached the top, which wasn't normal for me. The top of the tower was air-conditioned and possessed its own snack and drink counter. There were 5 comfortable chairs circling the room. Graves was in one of them, and he and I were alone in the room. He didn't look at me when I entered. He was staring outside at the training field, watching the squads as they broke up and began to spar with one another. There would be no live-fire exercises today. It was all light exercises and hand-to-hand. Even the officers knew when the troops were tired of dying and needed a break. "Mind if I help myself to a glass, sir?" I asked him. He waved his hand over his shoulder at me. I took this as approval. I poured myself something fizzy and sweet. It eased my sweating body when I drank it.
"You feeling all right, McGill?"
he asked finally.
"Never better,"
he chuckled.
"You're a tough bastard. I like that. I really do."
"You've got a funny way of showing your love, if you don't mind my saying, Centurion."
He spun around in his chair, which swiveled without a squeak.
"You want to know why you're up here?"
"So I don't fall on my face on the field and give it all away?" His smile faltered.
"You're angry? I'm surprised, but I guess I shouldn't be. Gratitude is a rare component in most people's personalities."
I blinked at him, then frowned.
"You want a big thanks for having me executed?"
"You weren't executed. At least not permanently."
"It felt real enough, sir."
I think you need to keep things in perspective, recruit. I didn't have to bring you back. I took a major risk in doing so. I'll have you know that Primus Turov was against it. That bitch, I thought to myself, but I nodded.
Sorry if I don't feel like kissing anyone's ring today. They told me when I came out it was a bad grow.
Graves frowned. A bad grow? Why didn't they recycle and do it right?
I wanted to shiver at the idea of being recycled. Right then, for the first time, I wondered how often that happened. How often did a man miraculously return to life, only to be killed again instantly and brought back yet again? I bet they threw those little slices of our memories away by not copying our minds when such dark events occurred. I sipped my fizzy sugar water and stared out at the practice field. They didn't want to risk a regrow. The bio said I should be all right in a few days.
He nodded. Well enough, then. With any luck, the Galactics will never bring it up again. You were executed promptly with one of their own as a witness. Fortunately, they can't tell us apart, nor do they track individual IDs for us. To them, we're like fish thrashing in a vast pond, or rabbits nibbling in an endless field. There are billions of us, and we don't matter as individuals.
I looked at him seriously. Why did you bring me back, sir? It was less of a risk to leave well enough alone.
Because it wouldn't have been right,
he said.
You did your job well. You led your team out of an impossible situation.
I almost believed him, but I waited quietly, staring, just in case. Graves returned my gaze evenly, then he shrugged after a moment.
That's not the only thing, naturally.
Naturally, I thought to myself. He turned back to the practice fields. The teams were being issued combat knives, sharp ones. They flashed with edges like white lines in the bright sunlight that streamed in from the dome overhead. I winced as one recruit opened up another's arm. There would be plenty of new skin sprayed over open wounds tonight.
The real reason was that Harris and I owe our lives to you.
I looked at him in surprise. How's that, sir?
We were at the bottom of the mine and cut off. Several teams never made it out of that mine, McGill. Yours did. When you made your report, that changed everything.
I began to put it together. I nodded. When I made my report, they had confirmation of your death, right? I asked. At that point, they authorized your revival, so they were holding off on doing it until you came out of there or were confirmed dead? He nodded slowly.
That's right. And with the Legion leaving Cancri Nine, that would have been it for all of us if you hadn't made it out. They'd keep the data, but never make our copies. Permadeath for all.
I understood now why he was impressed by my efforts to survive, and why he'd felt the urge to go the extra mile to keep me breathing. If I hadn't made it out, we'd all have been done for. Sir, I asked, what will all the Galactics do if they find out I'm still alive?
They won't.
I know that, sir, but hypothetically.
Hypothetically? I don't know. I don't know how connected that inspector is, or how pissed off he might be. I would guess we'd all be permed officially. Possibly the entire Legion would be unloaded on a rock and nuked. Hell, I don't know.
I stared at him. That wouldn't be right. I remember galactic law from school. It's quite egalitarian. The Galactics are no more... By this time, Graves was laughing.
You read their laws, their treaties. The deals they signed with Earth, that's grand. You should read a little more of history, son. Those who rule don't take insults lightly. They bend the rules now and then, and when they do, they always bend them in their favor. It's a natural part of life, I think.
I shut up because I realized I didn't know what I was talking about. Graves had been out here in space for decades. Who was I to lecture him on the way the universe was supposed to work? Well then, I said, I thank you for reviving me. Am I free to go, sir?
Sadly, no. I have to have your word that you won't speak of this incident to anyone. You won't bring up Galactics or being executed, none of it. If you do, your data will be lost, and your next revive will never happen. Do I make myself clear, McGill?
Like starlight, sir.
Good. Now head to Blue Deck. You look like shit. Get yourself some chemical help. We'll be redeploying tomorrow, and I need every man in fighting shape.
I paused, stunned. Redeploying? Where, sir?
He frowned. I'm not accustomed to being asked questions by recruits, McGill. Don't take our little conversation as some kind of camaraderie. We're not best friends.
Of course not. But I thought we were leaving, Cankri Nine. I thought we'd given up on this mission.
Graves laughed at me. The laugh was an unpleasant one. Given up? No, recruit. This war has just begun. Legion Varus always triumphs. It does not give up when Earth's territory is threatened. We were tricked into this contract, but aren't done yet. The Galactics are observing, as you know intimately. Before this is over, we'll have proven to them yet again who the best fighters are.
I was confused. I had no real idea what he was talking about. I knew that Legion Varus often fought other mercenary companies to demonstrate we were the best, but so far I hadn't seen any evidence of this occurring on Cankri Nine. All we'd fought were packs of angry natives.
One last question, sir, I said, if you don't mind.
I do mind, but ask it anyway.
Who are the enemy? What mercenary company are we fighting against? He looked at me in surprise.
Really, McGill? I thought you might have figured that out by now. Maybe that regrow did scramble your brains.
But, sir, we fought nothing but Saurians since we got here. Endless waves of lizards. The only other alien we encountered was the Galactic Inspector himself.
Endless waves of lizards,
he said, smiling tightly.
You should be a poet, McGill.
I thought about that for a second. Are you saying that Saurians themselves are the enemy? That they want to challenge us for supremacy in this region of space? Are they trying to form their own legions?
I doubt they call them that. They tend to fight in hordes. More numbers, more meat, less armament. But you have to admit, they are pretty effective.
But why, sir? They have their steel, their minerals to sell. Isn't that easier for them?
He shrugged. How the hell should I know why they've decided to try this takeover? Maybe the market on steel has crashed. Maybe they've lost a number of accounts and are hurting for credits. Whatever the case, I think they've been working toward this for a long time. Otherwise, why are they our very best clients? Why so many missions? To observe and learn, that's my guess.
I didn't know what to say. They are warlike, primitive by alien standards. They don't even have a worldwide government. Maybe mercenary work would suit them. Do you really think they can beat us? We slaughter them out there. Graves lifted an admonishing finger.
Never underestimate an opponent, McGill. If they had all their credits dumped into weaponry the way we do, just think of it. What if the Saurian waves you faced had been as well equipped as we were? What would have happened?
I don't know. They might have wiped us. He nodded slowly.
Exactly. That was their plan from the start. They gave us a phony contract and we signed on. Then they cheated by fielding, as you so eloquently put it, endless waves of lizards. Now they're claiming victory with the Galactics. Worse, you personally managed to kill the Chief Inspector, the very individual that will decide the outcome of this territorial struggle. Twice.
I stared at him. My eyes were squinched up and my teeth were bared in a grimace. I felt slightly sick and I didn't think it was due to the bad regrowth this time.
Yes, Graves said, smiling at me grimly. I can see now that you fully grasp the situation and your part in it. Now kindly get the hell out of my tower. I'm already regretting letting them revive you at all.
I headed for the door, and I didn't look back. Fortunately, I was excused from the knife-fighting exercises for the day. I wasn't really up to it. I was feeling better by dinner, and by the next day, as the ship began lurching and firing maneuvering jets, my stomach was operating fully again. But I wasn't happy. I knew, possibly more than any other recruit in the Legion, what was really going on. We weren't here to guard some mining complex. We were here to prove we could outfight an equivalent number of lizards, and from what I'd seen, the enemy was more than willing to cheat in this regard, throwing at us 10 times our weight in lizards. I had no idea how many dinos we'd killed thus far, but it had to be more than 10,000 altogether. Maybe the number was twice that high. The problem was the enemy had the resources of an entire planet to draw upon. They had millions of lives to spend. We had a finite number of men and guns. Our only advantages were in equipment and know-how. We had professional, well-armed troops. Troops that could come back to life and fight again over and over. It was a grim thought, and I felt that a grim battle was surely coming. Our first advantage, which our Tribune was hastily employing, was maneuverability. Using Corvus, we could come down wherever we wanted and face the enemy on our own terms. I was sure the Saurians below us were watching closely, wondering what our next move was going to be. Aboard ship, speculation was rampant.
"What the holy hell do you think old Drusus is up to, McGill?"
Carlos asked me loudly. Everyone looked at me. They'd seen my special trip to the observation tower, my day off from exercises, and my trips to the blue level. They knew something odd was going on with me, but they didn't know what it was. In particular, Carlos was going mad with curiosity.
"Carlos is right," said Kiwi, jumping into the pack.
She'd taken every opportunity to snipe at me since our breakup. She wasn't too fond of Natasha, either.
"You know something. I want to hear it. We've got the right to know."
"No," I told them both, shaking my head. "You're in Varus, remember? None of us have rights of any kind. But it doesn't matter because I don't know where we're going. If I did, I wouldn't be at liberty to say."
"You're such a kiss-up all of a sudden," Carlos complained. "You were such a tough guy down in the steel tunnels. What did they do to you? Do you feel bad inside now?"
I actually did feel rather off balance, but I wasn't going to admit it to him. I knew that Carlos and the rest were half joking and half serious, trying to browbeat information out of me. I struggled not to get angry with them. "I'm fine," I said. "But it's time for you to shut up unless you want a fresh lesson in hand-to-hand." I'd started off untrained, but over the last 6 months, I'd become known as one of the best with primitive weapons. Right now, I didn't feel good, but they didn't know that. No one wanted to challenge me after a grueling day on the field. They broke up their circle and wandered off grumbling. All of them, that was, except for Natasha. She lingered and stared at me with narrowed eyes.
"What? Are you suspecting the worst, too?" I asked her.
"You know something," she said. "I can tell. We all can. You really don't want to tell me?"
I wanted to all of a sudden.
"What's in it for me?" I asked.
She smirked and gave me a small kiss. I reached for more and she pushed me back.
"I'm not Kiwi," she said.
I laughed.
"Okay, sorry. I can't tell you anything, but I suspect we'll all find out very soon."
We left it at that and headed for our bunks. I'd been asleep for less than an hour when a whooping alarm went off. It was the emergency klaxons. Bewildered and half asleep, I tumbled out onto the steel deck, scrambling with my kit. All around me, recruits were doing the same.
"Is the ship under attack?" Kiwi asked.
"No, dummy," Carlos snapped. "The evasion jets aren't even firing."
Kiwi apparently didn't like being called a dummy any more than the rest of us. She kicked him in the butt, and he caught her foot. He tried to twist it, but she snapped it back and threw a punch.
"Hey, hey," I said. "Let's get our gear on. This is for real."
"Oh, yeah?" Carlos asked. "You knew, right? Let me guess. The date marked on your calendar, or did Graves text you personally?"
"You know what, Carlos?" I said. "You're an even bigger asshole in the middle of the night."
Everyone laughed and loudly agreed. Carlos grumbled, but he shut up and put his gear together. 5 minutes later, we were jogging down the passages to the tubes. We shot down one at a time. The arrows were lit yellow on the floor and walls, even the ceiling. Our squad number was easy to follow. I knew, long before we got there, where we were headed. The team chit-chatted around me as we moved quickly toward the lower decks. "It's another drop? Can't be. This is yellow level. That could only mean we're boarding a lifter. At least we don't have to get fired out of the cannons again." In general, the group was happy it wasn't going to be a hot drop. If the LZ was clean enough to allow a lifter to land, it had to be relatively safe. We were herded aboard a lifter and clamped into place. Rows of troops faced one another, but few of us made eye contact. Not even Carlos was up for any new jokes. We were tired and worried. The troops had been elated when they'd pulled the Legion off Cancri IX. My team had been left behind, of course, but most had seen it as a narrow escape. The assignment had been rough, and no one wanted to stick around and see just how many lizards they would throw at us the next day. Now, however, that feeling of relief was over. We weren't going home. We weren't even going to another planet, another assignment. We were going back down onto a planet that had turned utterly hostile. I leaned back and closed my eyes. The lifter shook, rattled, and squeaked. I smelled hot metal and strange chemicals. Cold air and hot vapors chased over us as different parts of the ship vented and adjusted themselves. It was nothing like the luxury ride a passenger ship provided back home. My head lolled, and I nearly fell asleep. Off and on, my chin touched my chest and woke me up. Suddenly, an elbow jabbed my belly. I lurched awake, angry. I grabbed Carlos's hand and twisted one of his fingers up away from the rest. His grin faded away. "Sorry, man. I know you feel like shit. Now please don't break my finger. I need that one. I kinda need them all." The truth was, I had been planning to break his finger. In my mind, I could hear the snapping sound it would make, and I knew that for an instant it would feel very good to have done it. I sighed and let him go. Sometimes Carlos and his rude joking around could drive a man crazy. At least he was smart enough to know when he'd crossed the line. I closed my eyes again, and my chin touched my chest. I dreamt for a few minutes that I was back in the revival room, and I just experienced another bad grow. My legs were missing. I saw that first. But then I lifted my hands to my face, and they were gone too. I lurched awake. The lifter had landed with a final rattling crash. Everyone winced. The shocks on these things were huge but old and creaky. None of that mattered now, though, because we were down.
"Welcome back to Cancri IX, people," Carlos shouted.
People shouted back unkind things. There were a few ragged cheers, but most of the troops were groaning. My eyes were locked on the ramp. It slowly unclamped itself and began to lower. A line of bright sunlight struck us in the face. Everyone squinted, but we couldn't look away. Where on this heartless world of steel were we now? Chapter 18. The ramp went down with a loud whirring sound. The orange line of sunlight grew and grew until we had to dial our faceplates to their darkest setting. With black shiny visors hiding our faces, we felt the clamps disengage. We were free of our seats. We slapped the buckles and fell away. Veteran Harris appeared as if on cue and walked up and down the line. I knew that every squad on this ship had its own veteran who was doing the same thing with his allotment of troops.
"All right, on your feet," he shouted. "We've lucked out, recruits, as I'm sure you've figured out by now. The brass figured we were homesick and missed our pet lizards. They, in their infinite wisdom, have redeployed us to a new location." "What's that, veteran?" Carlos asked. We all watched, wondering if Harris was going to thump him. He didn't. "I don't know, people, but I do know what we're supposed to do. We're getting our butts off this ship and down that ramp. There will be arrows leading us to our first destination."
"What the hell?" Carlos asked. "What kind of briefing is that? Does anyone know why we're here?"
Harris's hand reached out and clamped onto Carlos. He pulled him close and squeezed him until he choked.
Now, didn't I just say that I didn't know?
Yes, veteran,
he gasped.
Ortiz, don't you ever know when you should shut up and follow orders?
I have trouble with that.
Harris propelled him toward the ramp. Carlos rammed into me, but I was ready for that. I took the shove with my pack, having set my feet against the movement. Carlos grunted unhappily. A minute later, we were trotting off the ship, carrying our gear. Everyone on the lifter appeared to be a light trooper, with only a few weaponeers mixed in. All I saw were snap rifles and unarmored suits. I had a bad thought then. What if they'd only sent us down here? What if the heavies were being held in reserve? It was a horrible idea, and I tried to abandon it, but I couldn't. After all, they'd sent just the light troops down into those lizard-infested mines. Didn't we deserve a break? We followed the flashing lines onto miles of wide-open tarmac. They led us away from the ship. In a long line, two abreast, we trotted toward what looked like a massive building. I turned this way and that, looking at everything I could. We were clearly at a spaceport. It was big, at least as big as the one on the east coast of North America sector back home.
Hey, check it out, Carlos said, pointing off to the right. That's a NERB ship, or I'm Irish.
We all looked the way he'd pointed. Even veteran Harris swiveled his head.
A NERB ship? Asked Natasha. There's no way that's local shipping.
I thought about it, and suddenly things began making sense. The NERB were an odd race. They were our galactic bureaucrats. They hired out as accountants and customs inspectors, ensuring that every world was following their trade restrictions and meeting their obligations. In fact, they had a monopoly on the service, an official monopoly, of hiring out as officials.
McGill is right,
Kiwi said, almost stumbling as she tried to run and look at the NERB ship at the same time.
I recognize those lines. They always put those shark fin-looking things on top.
This must be their galactic spaceport, I said. The real one. I received a number of faceless stares from their visors. Every planet had one spaceport that was authorized to engage in interstellar trade. The NERB, working as agents of the Galactics, liked to keep a close eye on ships from other systems, making sure they traded only what they were allowed to. Their presence indicated this spaceport handled interstellar trade.
But what the hell are they doing here?
Carlos asked. We were all thinking it, but he was the only one that voiced the thought.
If we mess with their interstellar port, won't the Galactics get pissed off?
That's enough chatter, veteran Harris shouted. Save it for the run. We're not done yet. We're running up those steps. Look.
We turned away from the NERB ship and paid attention to where we were going again.
We're climbing the outer walls?
Carlos asked in disbelief. That's what it looks like, I said. We watched as the leading elements of the cohort reached the walls surrounding the main complex, which had to be the terminal and warehouses. Such areas had strong security. There were Saurian guards there posted on the walls. They were watching us, and we watched them.
They must be wondering what the hell is going on, I said. Yeah, they're probably radioing their headquarters, reporting this invasion firsthand.
It wasn't until elements of the first squad reached the top of the walls that things turned ugly. The Saurian guards were all raptor types, and they were well armed. They had armor on which glinted in the overly bright sunlight. For the record, I was slightly proud to see we didn't fire the first shot. Maybe that was what the Tribune had planned all along. Maybe Drusus had decided to just send us charging at the walls in vast numbers looking scary to force the dinos to act. The guards soon figured out we weren't tourists. They began closing the gates as we reached them, but 100 or so troops made it through before they clanged together. When the light troops mounted the steps inside, the guards finally opened fire. This was an expansion of the war, a breaking of the rules. Normally, events at the spaceport were very civilized. We brought warfare and mayhem to our enemy, on ground of our own choosing. I could imagine that the Saurians had been communicating with their leaders, surprised and uncertain as to how to proceed. When they did get the order to fire on us, we were shocked by their powerful weaponry. Each Saurian guard had a long tube which rode on his shoulder. I didn't recognize the weapon type, but I knew it wasn't going to be snap rifles versus teeth this time. Violet gouts of energy leapt off the walls, quickly burning down the men who'd made it inside. There were at least 30 heavily armed and armored guards up there now, and more were showing up all the time. They directed their beams down onto the tarmac like men with fire hoses, nailing those of us who were locked outside the compound. The beams incinerated whatever they touched. Men fell burning like a field of dry grasses. I felt glad as I watched that we weren't the first to reach those walls. As there was no way through, our orders changed.
"That's it," screamed Harris into our headsets. "Break ranks, squad. Follow me."
He veered to the right, and we followed him in a knot.
"Spread out! Spread out! Run for that truck!"
We were running all out now. The only cover nearby was a refueling truck. We'd almost reached it when another squad beat us to it. They huddled close and began peppering the enemy on the walls with their snap rifles. We slowed down, and Harris lifted his arm, directing us toward another more distant scrap of cover. This time it was a communications tower of some kind. We never heard his order to move on, however. Suddenly, the refueling truck a group of our troops were hugging up to was taken out. It flared cherry red, then transformed into a white explosion. My entire squad was thrown off their feet. Some of us had burning uniforms. The squad that had been taking cover behind that truck had vanished. There were only a few smoking boots and broken bits of gear left.
"Head for the tower," Harris said. "From there we'll spread out and charge the wall."
It was insane, but we had no other choice. There were landing pits for ships here and there, but nothing that wasn't over a mile off. The walls of the terminal building were closer than that. From all around us, groups of troops began firing. They were exposed, but we outnumbered the enemy 50-1. Things changed when some of our weaponeers got their big projectors set up and raked the top of the wall. The enemy was forced to duck, and I saw some of them get knocked right off their perches. I'd had some hopes that the early assaulters would win through and take the wall for us, saving those of us still out in the open. But despite their surprise tactics, they were burned away, swept right off the puffcrete stairways by the heavy energy weapons. Unarmored, light troops couldn't take any hint of a hit from such powerful guns.
"I hit one with my rifle," Carlos complained. "I swear I did. No penetration, zero."
"How the hell are we going to get up those walls?" Kivi asked.
There was a touch of panic in her voice. Veteran Harris didn't answer right away. We'd reached the tower, and we were hiding behind it. They couldn't take this structure down as easily as a truck full of fuel. It was a solid building. That didn't stop them from trying. As soon as they noticed we were hiding back there and taking pot shots from cover, they swept the base of the tower with their energy weapons. Only one of us got hit. Kivi was too slow to pull back. Either that, or she never saw it coming. She was there 1 second, screwing on her scope and barrel extension to turn her snap rifle into a sniper's weapon, and the next, she was gone. There wasn't much left. At least it was quick.
"Damn,"
I whispered.
Harris came to me and banged his head on my shoulder. "McGill, I need a volunteer."
I nodded. It was my fate to be the perpetual volunteer. Harris seemed to divine my thoughts.
"This isn't bullshit to get you killed. We have to get into this battle. We're pinned down and taking heavy losses."
I nodded again. He pointed to a small car sitting behind the tower. I stared at it, hoping he wasn't serious.
"Take that thing to the wall."
"Sir, I could run faster." His big hand lifted from my shoulder and slammed the back of my helmet.
"Maybe," he said, "but you can't fly."
I looked at the unit again, and I understood. It was an air car. The smallest, sorriest, golf cart-looking air car I'd ever seen.
"Take a man with you to fly a shotgun," he said.
I looked at Carlos and I grinned.
"Just because I woke you up on the transport?" he demanded.
"No, because you snapped my ass with a towel while I was puking."
"Oh yeah, that."
We climbed in and had it working 20 seconds later. Air cars were part of the tech the Galactics handed out to every world. They weren't special enough to warrant shipping from one planet to the next, but they were cool. Fortunately, the controls were virtually identical on worlds with humanoid populations. Saurians were a stretch, but they did have the same number of limbs and were about the same dimensions. The tail holes in the seats made you feel like you were going to slide out backward into the air and fall, however. I poured on the vertical lift, and we sailed higher and higher. I suspected at that moment that the Saurians had refused to pay for air power in the contract, so we couldn't do things exactly like this. They'd wanted us to stay trapped on the ground with them, stacking the deck in any way they could. When we passed over the tower, I veered off and flew at an angle. I already had a plan. From my vantage point in the car, I saw another lifter had landed, and I was going to park behind it and hide, looking for a moment to charge in and land in the compound. If we could get behind the Saurians, they would have to worry about us. They'd have a much harder time killing all our attacking troops on the tarmac. The second lifter, I realized after a moment's surprise, was one of ours. As I watched, troops gushed out of it. I was disappointed to see it was another cohort of lightly armed recruits. These guys never had a chance. The Saurians weren't about to be taken by surprise by another flank again. They unloaded on them the moment they ran down the ramp. 100 died in the first minute. They never even knew what hit them. The survivors were in shock, rolling under the ramp itself, trying to climb back up onto the ship. The Saurians were giving them hell. They made sure not to damage the ship itself, of course. There were rules to this game of war. We could kill Saurians and destroy their equipment. They could do the same to us. But any neutral aliens, or especially Galactics, as I'd found out, were strictly off-limits. Corvus and all her lifters were owned by the Skrull. Unless they attacked directly, they were non-combatants.
"Fly around to the other side! Fly low and fast!" Carlos shouted.
I didn't have any good ideas at the moment, and I was sickened by the waste of good troops coming off the second lifter. Against my better judgment, I did as he suggested. We dove around behind the lifter and skimmed low. We dashed in a spiraling circle after that, moving around the walls of the terminal.
"They're all focusing on the second lifter, trying to kill every troop that comes down the ramp. While they're occupied, we'll swoop in from the other side."
It was worth a try, so I did it. The move almost worked, to Carlos's credit. We were within about 200 meters of the wall and zooming toward it when the enemy finally noticed us. Or at least one of them did. He must have been posted on the far side of the complex by someone with a brain. Instead of joining the feeding frenzy of his comrades on the side of the wall where all the action was, he stood his post on our side, looking bored. Even so, he had his head cranked around to watch the interesting stuff going on behind him. When he finally spotted us, it was almost too late. He raised his heavy tube and directed it toward our tiny craft. One of us began screeching in fear. I'm pretty sure it was Carlos. I pulled back on the steering controls, which was essentially a tube of metal with a V-shaped head on it. My action caused the craft to buck upward, and we rose rapidly into the air. The dino's first shot burned the air under us. We saw the blinding glare of colored plasma like a flamethrower gush past below. Not satisfied with a miss, he levered it upward to track us. I thought I knew how a bug felt when a spray of deadly gas came out of a gardener's can. I heaved to the right away from the plasma. This threw us into a corkscrew spin. We went over the walls and crashed on a roof inside the compound. Carlos rolled on top of me. I thought my leg was broken for a few seconds, but I forced it to work and the pain subsided. I rolled Carlos off of me and got out my weapon. I expected at any instant the Saurian that had spotted us was going to burn us both to ash. The next gush of energy roared over our heads, however. I realized that the roof we were on was higher than the wall that ringed the compound. He couldn't hit us from his position. We were safe for the moment. I groaned and struggled to get back into the game.
"My ribs are broken,"
Carlos said, wheezing.
"Get up anyway."
On our hands and knees, we crept to the edge of the roof. I couldn't believe it. but we'd made it inside the compound. Chapter 19. The first thing we did was to try to find a way down into the building. I figured if we could get inside, we'd be safe because the building was full of NARB. As non-combatant aliens, no one was allowed to fight in their presence and risk injuring them. That was against galactic law. Unfortunately, we ran into a problem immediately. There was no way into the building from the roof.
"Any human would have put at least a hatch on this roof," complained Carlos.
I had to agree with him. I'd had more than my fill of cultural differences for the day. "We have to find a way down or we'll be pinned up here and they'll come kill us eventually." In the end, it took some risky behavior to find the way down. Instead of ladders or internal stairways, the Saurians had built an external set of steep stairs that went down one side of the structure. The stairs were exposed and there wasn't even a guardrail. Carlos and I looked at one another. I knew what we were both thinking. Did we run down those stairs, risking annihilation? Or did we lay on the rooftop and hope our side won the battle?
"I guess we have to do what we can sniping from up here," Carlos said.
I shook my head. "Sniping isn't enough. We can't get through their armor without focused fire."
"What do you suggest?"
he asked suspiciously.
"People are dying down there."
"Yeah, and we're probably going to die up here, too."
"We have to go for it," I told him.
I got up and set myself like a runner prepping for a sprint. My side hurt, my head hurt, and even my eyes seemed to ache in my skull. Groaning, Carlos heaved himself into a crouch at my side.
"This is crazy. We don't even know if there is a way in at the bottom of the stairs. I mean, don't you think they probably locked all the doors by now?"
"I don't know," I said. "But I'm not sunbathing up here while these lizards kill two cohorts of light troops."
"Why not?"
That was the last thing either of us said. Our conversation was interrupted by a sniping sound. We didn't even have time to throw ourselves flat. An energy-charged mortar shell came down on the top of the building. Some of the weaponeers supporting our light troops must have gotten into position. The building shook under us.
"They're crazy!" shouted Carlos. "If they kill one of the NARBs, we'll all be in trouble."
Another singing sound came, and the building shook again.
"Look!"
Carlos said, pointing across the expanse of the roof. We saw the shell had punched a burning hole through the roof. Without another word, we got up and ran to it, jumping blindly into the black, smoking hole. Anything was better than waiting around on the roof or charging down the exposed stairway. We came down on a dusty floor lined with offices. It appeared to be deserted. There were pod-like desks and seats that looked like blobs of paint. I landed on one of these and my boots punctured it. I learned that the formless blob was indeed full of colored liquid. I guess that was a comfortable seat for a NARB. The important thing was we didn't see any enemies. We looked, but there weren't any stairways on this level either.
"Are we going outside to run down or are we going to dig through the floor?" Carlos asked me.
"There has to be something," I said. I found it pretty fast. A trap door that led down to the next level. We dropped through and found another trap door. Carlos followed me, complaining every step of the way. When we reached the bottom floor, we found the bureaucrats who'd abandoned their desks in panic. Startled-looking NARBs huddled down there. And as one, they turned to look at us in surprise. I'd seen pictures, but had never met up with them personally. They had bulbous faces the color and consistency of thick green pea soup inside of a water balloon. To me, the aliens resembled their chairs. They looked like beached seals. They all began squawking at once in their own language when they realized who we were. I'm sure if I could have understood them, I'd feel insulted. As it was, I ignored them and pushed through the mass of their bodies to the doors. The doors weren't your typical affair from Earth. There was no automatic swishing sound or obvious pad to put your hand on. Instead, I was confronted with a bank of large rods in various positions. I figured they were switches of some kind, as they could be moved up and down in various directions. But which way to move them? Carlos followed me, bumping through the crowd of angry NARBs.
Do these guys bite?
He asked.
Only your bank account. Come here and help me get this open.
You're nuts, you know that? Why do you want to open the doors? The Saurian guards will murder us.
I'm not trying to open the door. I'm trying to open the big gates outside. I want to let our troops inside the walls.
All the while we talked, I worked various levers experimentally. I tried them one at a time. Most seemed to do nothing, while a few caused the sounds of grinding machinery to start up, then stop.
Carlos ignored me. He walked over to a box on one of the Narb's desk. He adjusted it, and suddenly sound poured forth. The sound turned into an incomprehensible babble of angry voices.
"It's a translator unit," he said. "I'm trying to dial it for Earthers."
Seeing what he was doing, a small Narb with a band around its neck waddled forward and nosed the device. Large yellow teeth snapped at Carlos's hands, and he pulled them away quickly. The Narb worked at the device, making careful choices.
"Do you understand this, barbarian?"
the box asked.
"Ah, yes," Carlos said. "It works."
"Excellent. You have accrued 7 criminal charges since you entered my awareness. I order you to perform self-execution."
That made us look up. The Narb had our full attention. The Narbs didn't make idle threats or demands. They were as unpleasant in personality as they were in appearance, but they followed rules to the letter. This concerned me, because as far as I could tell, we hadn't done anything yet to warrant execution.
"Self-execution? On what grounds?"
I asked the blob.
"Your attack upon this facility was monitored, as was everything you've done since arriving here on Cancri 9. Damaging this property is not in your contract. You have violated galactic law through willful breach of contract."
I looked at Carlos, and he looked back at me. Our visors were clear now that we were inside and the blinding light of Cancri's suns wasn't burning overhead. I could see that Carlos was as worried as I was. Trade contracts were more important than any other element of galactic law. They took it very seriously, as the entire fabric of their empire was based upon it.
"We're not aware of any violation," I said angrily.
Carlos lifted his hand and waved urgently for me to stop talking. I fell quiet, wondering if he knew how to handle these beings. I noticed the Narbs had shut up, too. They were no longer a pack of barking seals. Instead, they were a quiet, vengeful group that stared in eager anticipation.
"You have not performed as ordered," said the Narb. "Refusal to comply is an additional crime. Penalties may be elevated if you continue to resist."
I wasn't too worried about elevated penalties, as I was already up for self-execution. How were things going to get any worse? But then I reminded myself that things could get worse. Our unit, our legion, our ship, even our race could be penalized if the crime was big enough.
"What violation has been performed?" Carlos asked. His usual joking tone was absent.
"Do you refuse to comply?"
"No," he said firmly. "I do not refuse to comply. I'm requesting clarification."
"This is permissible to a point," said the Narb. "Your contract strictly forbids the use of aircraft during this campaign. That stipulation has been violated."
"Aircraft?" I asked, interrupting. "Are you talking about the air car we used to come here? That isn't Earth equipment. It doesn't count." Again, Carlos waved for me to be quiet.
"High Justice," Carlos said. "I'm sorry if there has been a misunderstanding, but no aircraft have been brought from our world to this world."
"That is not germane to the violation. Aircraft were used in this conflict."
"What proof do you have of this?"
"Your presence in this compound proves the violation. I don't see why you are bothering to evade my edict. It is valid, and delaying the order to self-execute will only worsen the violation."
I didn't see what the hurry was, but then I'm not a nerb.
Not if the violation is an error,
Carlos said confidently.
I'm attempting to determine whether or not the order is valid before it is followed.
This made the nerb ruffle.
I'm the prefect of this world. There is no higher authority on contracts. You offend me personally with your statements.
I apologize, but as the accused, I am within my rights. If we understood the violation and agreed with it, we would, of course, self-execute immediately.
Ah,
said the nerb, its ocular organs changing shape and retracting somewhat.
I understand the nature of your delays now. You believe your bodies will be copied. Perhaps you are awaiting a signal from your fellow criminals that indicates this process is prepared. I will take steps.
The nerb turned to its fellows and barked out orders in its own language, and they squawked back. The translator burbled as it tried to translate multiple inputs, and nothing intelligible came out of it for a few seconds.
Carlos, I said, what are they doing? Turning off our revival machines.
They can do that?
Yeah. My dad worked at the spaceport on Earth, the big one. The nerb have the power to enforce their decisions. They can turn off any galactic tech we bought from someone else, even our guns.
I was stunned. I hadn't known about that. Perhaps Carlos had learned a few things in life I hadn't. At least he had a better understanding of the nerbs than I did.
Prefect,
Carlos said, trying to politely gain the creature's attention again.
Prefect, if I could just...
It is done, said the alien, turning back to us triumphantly. There will be no more of your kind avoiding the reward you also richly deserve.
What you have done is a violation, I said, unable to keep quiet. I ignored Carlos, who tried to shush me again.
We do not violate any rules. It is not in our nature.
You have made a mistake. We did not use combat aircraft to land on this building. We did not kill any nerbs. We are in conflict with the Saurians only, and we apologize for any inconvenience we might have...
Ha, it is far too late for apologies.
Fine. Let's focus on facts and realities, then.
That is always our way.
You have accused us of a contract violation, I said, trying to control my temper. We have declared our belief. You've made an error. There must be some kind of arbitration.
The nerbs quieted. Arbitration? You claim the right of arbitration?
I do, I said quickly. There was a fresh round of grumbling from the assembled aliens. I could tell they didn't like what I was saying.
Very well. A stay must be granted in that case.
The nerb turned and spoke to its fellows, who seemed disappointed.
Have you reversed your disconnection of our systems?
I asked sternly.
We have.
I demand confirmation. Prove you have done what you say. The nerb ruffled anew.
You suggest we are lying. Your insinuation is insulting.
I am within my rights.
Your sensory organs can't read our incoming data. How can we prove our case?
Easily enough, said Carlos suddenly.
He was smiling, and I could tell that he was finally catching on to my plan.
All you have to do is open the front gates so we can see for ourselves.
Grumbling and no doubt cursing our names, the nerb went to a collection of switches. He organized them into a precise pattern, and the front gates rolled slowly open. Chapter 20. The battle outside had been one-sided up until this point. Our fellow legionnaires had been driven back to their lifters and were scattered around the spaceport, huddling behind any cover they could find. It had been a while since Carlos and I had been able to observe events firsthand. Apparently, Tribune Drusus had decided the light cohorts weren't going to be able to do the job alone. He'd ordered a cohort of heavy troops to head down to the planet. I gathered by this time the plan had been for the light forces to race from the blast pans to the central terminal and take it by surprise. By using our fastest ground forces, the Saurian guards were supposed to fall without much of a fight. Things hadn't worked out that way. Our lightning strike had reached the enemy, but they had been prepared. The battle had turned into a costly grind, and the Legion had been forced to commit more forces to the attack. At the same time, the Saurians in the city nearby were mobilizing their own defenders. We learned all this as the gates opened and we were able to reestablish our network with local troops. The Puffcrete walls, the distance, and the heat of action had prevented us from surveying current events up until now.
"This is great," Carlos said, looking outside. "They don't even know we are right here behind their lines."
"Maybe they do know, but they don't want to come in here and get blamed for any Nairb casualties." Carlos shrugged.
"Could be. Well, in any case, we've done our part. We can just observe through these viewports until..."
"I don't think so," I said. "When our troops come in hard, I'm going out there." Carlos looked at me like I was crazy. I guess he had a point.
"Why?"
I pointed. He followed my finger and sighed. Two of the Saurian troops were dead at the base of the wall on the inside. They'd been hit by heavy weapons fire by the look of it. But what I was pointing at wasn't the broken ragdoll-like corpses. I was pointing at their weapons, one of which looked undamaged.
"I'll go out there," I said. "Grab that plasma weapon and hose them down from behind. They don't have a lot of defending troops left. If we can nail them while their attention is diverted, we'll save a lot of our people."
"James," Carlos said, staring at the thick tubular weapon. "That thing looks heavy."
I smiled at him.
"That's why I need a wingman to help me operate it." "I knew you were going to say that."
We bided our time. The incoming fire on the walls intensified suddenly, and I knew the attack had to be underway. The Saurians returned fire sporadically, but for the most part, they just hunkered down, clearly planning on nailing our troops when they got in close. One of them finally noticed that the gates were open, and that we were there behind them watching. All my plans went out the window in that moment. I turned to the Nairb prefect, who had lost all interest in the battle and was riffling through contracts on his computer system. I'm pretty sure he was reading up on ours to screw us somehow later on.
"Prefect," I called, "if you want to avoid the death of everyone in this room, including yours, set that translator to let us speak with the Saurians."
"Why would I wish to help you?"
"So you don't die," I said. "The Saurians are coming in here, and there's going to be a fight if you don't..."
"Too dangerous. Not a violation, but a warning to the offending parties will be issued immediately if..."
"Yeah, I know. Just turn on the translator so I can talk to him."
The Nairb hesitated, but then a Saurian in armor loomed at the windows. He peered inside. The Nairb humped his body like a racing seal and managed to reset the device before the Saurian forced his way in.
"Soldier!"
I shouted, hearing the translator hiss and rasp.
"No energy weapons! It's galactic law!"
The trooper had a heavy beam unit aimed at my chest, but I'd made sure to stand directly in front of the masked Nairbs, who were now squawking behind me. I had no doubt they were bitterly complaining about my conduct. The Saurian lowered his gun, but he did not retreat as I had hoped. Instead, he extended a hand-to-hand weapon from each of his metal-covered foreclaws. I'd heard about these weapons. Scizores, some called them. They were like artificial claws of hardened steel. They resembled the killing claws of the Saurians' distant ancestors, and had been used in the past and present to gut an enemy in close combat. Without a word, he charged us. I'm sure he felt confident. He was stronger and larger than us and wearing heavy armor. Carlos and I dropped our snap rifles. They wouldn't be much use in this fight, and a ricochet that killed a Nairb would only seal our doom. I pulled out my combat knife, as did Carlos. Fighting an alien biped and hand-to-hand was a new experience for me. Up until now, everything had been about energy weapons or ballistic weapons. Now it was all about strength, skill, and tactics. Armor counted, too. As there were two of us, the alien took the simplest course. He ignored Carlos and charged me. I guess it made some sense. I had been the one with the balls to talk to him via the translator. Perhaps that had angered or insulted him in some way. I fought defensively. All around me, Nairbs humped away desperately. Desks were smashed and chopped as the Saurian slashed with his two heavy claws. I knew I couldn't cut through his armor easily, so I retreated, watching for an opening. Carlos trailed behind the Saurian and soon made his play.